And where we are met with cynicism and doubt, and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless dream that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Yes, 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 it's time. We all come together. Ah! Barack Obama.
Yes, we can.
Barack Obama.
We all come together.
Barack Obama. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Barack Obama. Barack Obama's making history, man. He's gonna win a message for the people saying, yes, we can, sure. Si se puede, today is the new day. So come on and throw your hands up, every woman, every man.
Barack Obama.
Yes, we can.
Barack Obama.
We all can.
Barack Obama. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Barack Obama.
Greetings, everyone.
Aloha and good tidings. The day and the hour and the minute continues to move to Nisara, yes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, we can.
Oh, and I guess I passed this talking stick to the hard new Rama man.
Oh, my. What has been being said out there goes to the sky concerning our announcement and all the stories having to do with the party of no. And the way folks are talking. I talked to Mr. X today, and Mr. X just said Mr. Obama is doing what is needed right now to get this in people's faces, that we are on the edge of the financial collapse of the dying empire. And it was not more than 2 days ago on Stephanie Miller on her show, Arianna Huffington said that the signs of a dying empire in its wake are leaving military occupations that it cannot pay for. And this is going on all over the world, where we have troops stationed that, in a sense, are being redoubled and tripled and quadrupled and quintupled to the tune of, are they machines or are they humans? And of course they want to create their android army, and they can't, because it ain't working. The nanites, the particles, are not functioning in that manner, because we are in zero point, yet Homer and Joe and Dave are still getting there. And I would just say that the party of no has nothing to talk about except fear. All of what is being said, I heard this incredible interview on Highly Credible, All Things Considered, NPR, Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights was on there, and he was talking about these firemen who just sat there and let this man's home burn down, and two cats and a dog left the planet. And Michael Ratner said that these are crimes that go to the highest level, and people are going to have to face the prosecution of what's occurring here. They're guilty. And today, on Keith Olbermann, they just talked about this. Jonathan Turley, constitutional scholar, was talking about these firemen. And the whole union in Tennessee are kind of up in arms going on with what's happening, because it has to do with the redistricting of the political process, and how when Tom DeLay, Jack Abramoff, and many others of this gang that were working with the Bush-Clinton crime family changed the political game lines and taxes and subscriptions to fire departments, and the fire department, like the police department, is the commons. It is part of we the people, like Ashtar talked about last night. It is we the people. It is part of what the founding fathers set up, and it will never be privatized. Even though at this point they are playing with this, and the way it is being described is these are the libertarian, how Tom Hartman did, laissez-faire capitalism. Libertarians, Republicans who want to get laid and smoke pot. That is what he describes it as.
And then he said, that was me. I was one of them.
Yeah.
He said I was a libertarian when I was in my 20s.
Yeah. And
Tom Hartman said.
He was, watching the outline that was occurring at those times. He's a little older than me. And what is just being said is that, you know, they brought this rolling back the Reagan tax, and the solar panels are being put back on the White House, as well as setting up solar communities, solar companies. During the late 70s, beginning of the 80s, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and other places surrounding Santa Fe, there was a place called Zoneworks, where they were building domes and spherical structures with solar panels.
Where was this?
In Santa Fe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're still there.
They're still there. And this is what we got to come back to. It's we the people. It's all being brought into manifestation right now. And this man, who they want to call an Islamic terrorist, is doing nothing. And Mr. X and the ones that are working with the King of Swords, the revelations that are unfolding concerning the financial fiasco, where, you know, Bernie Madoff is still sitting there in jail with, you know, Mr. Bruno. I call him Bruno. He was one of the biggest Russian arms dealers that, you know, was going on during the 80s, 90s, into the early 2000s. Victor Bout is his name. And let's just say he is the equal of the Russian counterpart to Lex Luthor. It's not a pretty picture. Mm-hmm. And what is being passed along inside of the big house that has to do with Bernie Madoff and all the other stories is how the game is played. And all this is politics, because our race of divine beings bought the idea, I am less than creator source.
Did you print out that article we saw this afternoon? You were going to print out?
It didn't quite work out the way, no.
Okay, well, maybe we can find it. We can use it.
Is
it underneath that phone?
Actually, I did.
Okay, just check it. Okay.
Yeah. The energies of what is going on in terms of leading up to the midterms, and it didn't. It's just so intense with the frequencies of what is being said, where this man is leading us to the place where we can have Starfleet Academy and become the 33rd member of the Confederation of Worlds. Right now, this is occurring. And in spite of the party of no and the fear-based tactics that are going on, all of it is falling by the wayside as we remember who we are, what we are doing with this story.
What we're doing here in the first place.
That's right. And as we wake up to who we are, all that we are, and it's occurring exponentially across the planet with the energies of all that is right now. And it's already come to pass that the end of the Mayan calendar is not an end. It is a beginning. The beginning of Sat Yuga, and all of that is already happening in the understanding. So many revealings and revelations of ancient stories about mother's divine children, who were the Tuatha De Danann, the Anunnaki, the Nephilim, all of these ones who claim that they are here to help us yet enslave us. With every breath, every ounce of energy, we continue. And it is at a place where Lucifer has lost. He has come back to love. Like Cynthia has said, get the popcorn and Violet snoring.
Oh, Violet. Violet, the Doberman pincher, is snoring and snoring, in case you're wondering.
Yes.
She's a member of the family household where we are now. We're outside of Nashville in a little town called Lebanon. And we're with Mary Jane and Richard. And Mary Jane gifted us this incredible bolt that we've been traveling last year and this year. It goes back to December 10th of 2008 when Rama had a little tete-a-tete with the dark side, and they attempted to take him out. And it was the second time, and the king of Egypt called up Rama and told him to get a new car because his car was so easily identified. And Rama, you know about that car. I mean, you had everything on there.
Ancient history.
You had all the posts,
bumper stickers,
which made it to the point where he said you needed to get a new car. And Mary Jane got in her heart that she would give this car. So we're here and we're coming full circle, and Nasara is definitely on our doorstep.
It is extremely in the place where
Winnie the Pooh.
Yes.
The little dog. She's a little tiny toy poodle. So we've got this big and little here as part of the family.
And the way Mr. X put it today is, with every breath that is being taken, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Barack Obama are doing what needs to be done. And it is not the lies that the lunatic fringe on the right that are pushing. It is at the place, this one nation rally that occurred in the last few weekends, not more than a weekend ago or two, I mean, Ed Schultz was out there just laying it out in lavender, and we saw today from on Grit TV, Laura Flanders and Tom Hartman were talking with Reverend Jesse Jackson at the One Nation rally, and I mean, this was so awesome to behold in terms of the wisdom and outpouring. And nobody has talked about the numbers. I heard 500,000 people were there, and they are not talking about this at any level on any of the media, and I'm surprised even Keith or Rachel hasn't. Yet members of MSNBC were there, and it has to do with removing the FCC, as like what Amy Goodman talks about is almost, you know, and I want to use the word pirate radio, where people set up their transmitters and their broadcasting. And it is about the fact that, you know, you get the word out, as this is a different kind of revolution. It is about respect and love. And that is the highest frequencies that we can go to. And I would also just say at this time, we do need to pay this radio bill. It is long overdue.
Yes, there's a little bit more coming in, yet we need to get a commitment, everyone.
Serious, serious, serious stuff. This needs to be handled immediately.
Oh, well, yes, because we have an overdue bill from last month, and now we're into the new month. So please, if you would be so kind, everyone, to email us at Coran999@comcast.net, and let us know that you're willing to make a commitment. And again, the BBS radio station too has a PayPal button, and just scroll all the way down and look for the Galactic Healing Call for Wednesdays, and you can pay it forward there. And on Thursday you can pay it forward there, and on Friday, which is the Galactic Roundtable Call. And then on Friday it's the Hard News, and then on Saturday it's the True History of our galactic neighborhood and Nasara within it. And remember, we're becoming the 33rd planet to enter the Federation of Worlds as an ascended humanity and planet. And that means we have more responsibility to help all the other planets that are on this ascension coil with us. So all things are healable as we understand what time we're coming into now, which is time of peace. And it's a time of peace and love that, as I understand it, is infinite. It is not returning to this old way of sacrifice.
No more old time.
No more sacrifice. It is time for ecstatic, creative joy. And it's not static at all. It's stable in the heart. The nectar of our heart is so rich. And the ability for us to love is so much more than we knew before now. That whole thing, nectar of the heart, we can place in there.
Okay.
Beautiful people. Mm-hmm. And let's just stop and read this first. And then, folks, let's give the phone numbers that you want to call in with things that you've been watching. There's so much new.
There is.
And Amy Goodman also had a special on this morning of how our FBI and our CIA have been conjuring up lies to create terrorism and blame it on people who are Islamic in this country from 9/11 and all kinds of other operations, black ops, and they went behind the scenes and they got caught.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say the kind of stuff they're showing now. In addition, they're talking about the fact that, and Tom Hartman and Laura Flinders were there together on Saturday.
That's right.
They were interviewing Jesse Jackson and Laura Flinders. But the story about that Bush was ready to do an invasion of Iraq.
2 months.
2 months after 9/11.
And we all watched.
And we all watched, and we all have now all of his discussions are all recorded, and they're being exposed now. And Donald Rumsfeld, 3 weeks after 9/11, was talking about doing something and how we were going to do it, and what it was going to help afford them, et cetera, et cetera.
And in the last few days, someone told me there is going to be a new full investigation into 9/11. I remember that being told to me in the last day or two.
Yeah, well, we're not waiting down the road
to
play a game.
No, right now.
It's all done already.
It's all done. John Conyers was being interviewed by Laura Flanders and Tom Hartman, talking about the corruption of the highest court in the land. How if Lex Luthor is over there in North Korea and he does a deal with Kim Jong-il, and Kim Jong-il decides to give $20 billion to Sarah Palin. It's, you know, this is why we need the checks and balances that were set up by our founding fathers that bring us into galactic universal law right now. And where that is going is the Lady Master, who is in charge of this nation, Lady Master Nada, who answers to the Solar Tribunal as the head of the Solar Tribunal, as well as the best lawyer in the galaxy, is having to deal with these weighty issues right now concerning how the laws and the justice system serves the very wealthy. That tiny little 1% where Tom Hartman describes it as if you took a stack of $100 bills, it would go something like 23 miles into the sky. That is how much money these guys are making hand over fist on the hedge funds and the different games going on that you are never...
But they're not doing it at all anymore. They were busted.
Correct.
They're busted.
Yet at the same time...
And now today...
Yes.
Today, Bernanke told the truth.
That's right.
And he said the United States is on the brink of financial disaster.
Correct.
So let's read that. Yesterday, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke delivered a speech before the annual meeting of the Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council in Providence, Rhode Island. In the speech, he warned about the current state of the government finances. His conclusion? The situation is dire and unsustainable. And it was Arianna Huffington that said, you can tell when an empire is falling because they always leave a war that they cannot support in its wake. And so this is Bernanke saying so. In his way. It is remarkable that mainstream media has given this speech zero coverage. I repeat, the central banker of the United States says in his own words, let me return to the issue of longer-term fiscal sustainability. As I have discussed, projections by the CBO and others show future budget deficits and debts rising indefinitely and at increasing rates. To be sure, projections are to some degree only hypothetical exercises. Almost by definition, unsustainable trajectories of deficits and debts will never actually transpire because creditors would never be willing to lend to a country in which the fiscal debt relative to the national income is rising without limit. Herbert Stein, a wise economist, once said, quote, as something cannot go on forever, it will stop, unquote. One way or the other, fiscal adjustments sufficient to stabilize the federal budget will certainly occur at some point. The only real question is whether these adjustments will take place through a careful and deliberative process that weighs priorities and gives people plenty of time to adjust to changes in government programs or tax policies, or whether the needed fiscal adjustments will be rapid and painful response to the looming or actual fiscal crisis. This is as close as you are ever going to see a central banker admit that his country's financial situation is so dire that it could break up at any time. Let's just give the phone numbers in case people want to come together with us and speak. The phone numbers are 530-413-4511. And again, those first numbers are the same for the next and the next. 530-413-4515 and 530-413-4520. Okay, everybody, that's the key. Here's some more from Bernanke's remarkable speech. The recent deep recession and the subsequent slow recovery have created severe budgetary pressures, not only for many households and businesses, but for governments as well. Indeed, in the United States, governments at all levels are grappling not only with the near-term effects of economic weakness, but also with the longer-run pressures that will be generated by the need to provide health and retirement security to an aging population. There is no way around it. Meeting these challenges will require policymakers and the public to make some very difficult decisions and to accept some sacrifices. Yet history makes clear that countries that continually spend beyond their means suffer slower growth in income and living standards and are prone to greater economic and financial instability. Earl!
Hi, Earl.
Hi, Earl. On line A1. Hello, Commander.
How are you two doing tonight?
We are doing good.
We are, and we're feeling very, very good now that we're heading home. That the journey has been, it's been deeper as we went last year through these wonderful places, and it's gone deeper, and the commitment to community in the different communities of people has gone deeper. And I'll just say, guess the vote everywhere we've been is we're ready. Nasara, yes. How about you, Earl?
I'm ready. I've seen that the Dow was down a bit today, like earlier. And personally, I don't see it getting back up to, it's 13,000, anytime soon. But here's how I see it. The U.S. is falling on its sword.
Yes, and see, Mr. Bernanke seems to have to be forced to agree with it. And remember that Nasara doesn't need it to get back up because we're just leaving that thing and closing the door. And we're starting over again.
That is correct.
This is to show the people the result of the end game that these folks have been playing. Knowing that we learned in previous conference calls that Karl Marx said it would only last for 200 years, a capitalistic system. That's the outside limit of its life force. So this isn't anything new. They just don't tell people, and people don't pursue it, and they're too busy looking how they're going to tread water or barely survive at the end of the empire. So it's not going to. Let's just put it that way. What we're going to do is we're going to start over, and we're going to start cottage industries, and the cottage industries are going to be done within community, where it does take a village to raise a young one, and it needs to be done with spiritual principle, moral and ethical values, and it needs to be done, like we said, beyond single home dwellings that don't think anybody else has any business with theirs.
In service to the goddess.
And it needs to be together and start with townships and moving into the new technologies and the healing modalities and the spiritual life that the man with the plan actually brought through the Ascended teaching. What do you say, Earl?
And I agree with what you're saying. My question is, why would they pick such a low group? I mean, like with having a television. Why wouldn't it be smarter for them if they wanted to do this right to create an imposing military force or like some kind of special kind of, you know, like, there was this, toy line called G.I. Joe, and they have an enemy called Cobra. But it's not like the Taliban. It's like an army in an organization that wants to take over the world. To me, that would be more believable than this whole Taliban thing.
I got to answer you in the context, Earl, that we are dealing with a very xenophobic culture called the Anunnaki Draconian Empire, and
what does that mean, xenophobic?
They do not like outside contact except through their own kind. And in that sense, it is...
Oh, it's kind of like germaphobes, like Howie Mandel is. He doesn't like to shake people's hands, so he just fist bumps them.
Howard Hughes used to be the same way, and it had to do with also...
Yes, and I do know that.
Yes. It has to do with different levels of frequency of this biotransducer called the Adam Kadmon, the Temple of the Living God. And as you would sense another person's electromagnetic field, you would, you know, as we can all see auras and connect with the thought form patterns, you know, most of... humanity is awakening to zero point, and there are a lot more lighted beings in the world than there are unlighted. Yet,
you could have fooled a lot of folks for a long time about that certain.
Correct. And Howard Hughes was one of those folks where he had ideas that were magical that came in the beginning. They came from people like Tesla and Einstein and others and Oppenheimer and even that weird character, Von Hopper. And it has to do with changing the timelines, and he knew that, yet he got bought out by Big Brother, and that he escaped, just like Tesla. Howard Hughes never died. And he faked his own death.
Hmm.
Yeah. And who's to say? Yet I will just say that this is all tied in with these 13 families who they know that the gig is up. And Mother is the conductor waiting on that train. And the train is leaving now. And we are witnessing the empire falling apart at the seams. And
the thing is that the body cannot withstand a lack of integrity in the mind or the heart.
No.
Of the person or the spirit of the person. So ultimately, there's no, it's a no win to attempt to, function with greed or lust or power without law. It is a futile attempt at what a material life, really. It's all been about materiality. And so spirituality prevails always because that's where love is and that's who we really are at source. So, of course, we're going home. Kicking and screaming is an option if you like it, but suffering is an option. How about that one?
I like it. And I'll take it, and I'll pass the talking stick.
Thank you, Earl.
Thank you.
I think we have Anne from Arizona on line D1. Anne, aloha.
Aloha to you, too. Hello, Rama and Tara.
Hello.
Okay, talk a little bit louder, Anne, if you might.
I will do so. I got lots to share with you. Bear with me. I'm not really good at this, but I'll do my best. Monday in downtown Phoenix was shut down because of a bomb scare.
Hmm.
Not another word about it. Shh, everything's quiet. Yesterday, a UFO shows up, a pyramid-shaped one. People were calling in the radio stations and the TV stations like crazy. Then, Tuesday afternoon, we had the biggest hailstorm you ever wanted to see in Arizona. Very, very phenomenal. Today, Arizona, it got all kinds of tornadoes, a lot of damage. Okay, now the things that's hitting the, this topic has been hitting the airwaves and the news, and this is where they're saying that Biden and Hillary are going to switch positions. And Hillary will be on the ticket for VP in 2012. I hope I have the year right. So please bear with me. And I, my question to you.
Wait a minute. You got
went
lost.
Away.
You went away, Lady Master.
Okay. I'm coming back. I'm coming back.
Yeah. Okay. There you are. Where did you go?
Okay. I'm not sure I have the year right, but they're talking about Hillary for VP. Is this, my question to you is this totally spin?
Oh, absolutely.
Girl,
yes.
God, that's, okay.
They are playing with that idea on 2012 as it is already 2013, yet they're not telling the folks.
It's the projection that's skipping the major change that's happening now. This is not going to be gradual in that sense. This is going to be rather abrupt right now. You heard, you know, just started reading this article that Bernanke said we're in total financial disaster right now.
And as you
there's
saw.
There's no way that we can continue. Remember what Sara does. It ends the party system permanently.
A lot of the things that are showing up and things are saying Barack Obama will be our last president. Do you have any information on that?
No, that's not true either. What that's
okay.
saying is that Barack Obama is the president that's ending the way we've been getting presidencies elected in the past.
Okay.
In other words, we're ending the old order. So, yeah, he's not just the last president to get in, even though the old order still appeared to be in charge. What he's doing is he's inspiring the world with the wishes of the people. And the way he said, I will be your leader, you're going to have to push me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't noticed, I would say that people are pushing. And what happened last Saturday is a good example of that.
Yeah.
And we're going to have, the daily, Mr. John Stewart. What's he
called? Oh, yeah. On the Daily Show, John Stewart, he is the Restore Sanity to America rally.
October 30th. And then there's Steve Colbert playing the other way. There is nobody else. The Steve Colbert also playing with that John Stewart's idea by saying that he's going to have a rally to promote more fear, which is just like John Stewart and Steve Colbert playing
back and forth.
Back and forth. Steve Colbert's, Bush's right-hand man, you might say, using his sarcasm and his double talk to really show people and make them laugh, even though it's not funny.
I mean, this was brought up on one of the serious, serious talk shows on NPR in the last week or two, in the sense of John Stewart, Steve Colbert, and how Steve Colbert testified before Congress in the consciousness, in the vein of what would the man with the plan do to help the people who are from Mexico or Afghanistan or Iraq or Nibiru, and they had no food, no shelter, no way to take care of themselves in the process of being in a foreign land, maybe having children that were raised in this foreign land, not having documentation, and he would care for them. He would make sure they are covered by paying it forward. This is what Steve Colbert was bringing up in the sense of the understanding. He was making a comedy scenario out of being in the field for 16 hours and knowing what it feels like. And it's not one time back in the 60s, marched with Cesar Chavez and the farm workers in California. And I got to shake his hand and thank him for what he did. And this is huge because he represents we the people, all these folks who are the true Aboriginal Moabite people that have never get talked about on any level. They just get swept under the carpet that are being told, go back to where you came from. And I could say the same on the other hand, where Mother is saying, I am the conductor on that train. I'm taking you back to where you came from. It's called Dracos. And we are dealing with the issue at hand in love and total responsibility and respect.
Speaking of draconian ways, what's the name of that gentleman that was on the Bioneers?
Oh, I missed that name.
He was just saying that because we have been loners and we haven't really been helpful in terms of changing our way of energizing our lifestyle, and we've been stuck on the oil and the coal and all of the dirty energy.
Fracking, blowing up mountaintops.
Oh, gosh, the fracking is just horrendous. The thing is that the countries that have oil at this point, should they turn off their spigots to the United States would be collapsed. It would just come to a halt. And he was just pointing out that this is a thing that's very stark in our reality, yet it would be a deserved thing to occur as we didn't do anything else about it, in the sense that the ways that we have been keeping have been endangering the planet very ability to survive on its own, as the amount of destruction that this monoculture with its isolationist and its, you might say, arrogant behavior has caused. It has caused an environmental disruption in our evolution, which again was instituted originally in Atlantis. It caused an environmental distribution then, a disruption then. And the thing is that the people are able to hear this in a way in which there are answers, and the constructiveness of Barack Obama putting those solar panels up now is like awakening Jimmy Carter's enthusiasm again in the people. I am so amazed at how he's been able to turn the tables right now and say, I'm in charge, I'm the president, and we have fed him enough of our own energies and positive thinking now that we have larger and larger groups coming and rallying on all these issues with intelligent mind and intelligent heart, which is what we want. We want to do it together. We want to remold this in a new life together. And I believe that it's really made the United States, again, a place where we can take this now, this gauntlet of our fall, and pick ourselves up in a way in which it's going to be 100% turnaround in a much greater result than it was in the example that FDR gave in the past. Hitler is dead. I believe he is definitely dead.
Yes.
And so let's go on to this one. And folks, don't hesitate to continue to call in as you want to participate.
Did we complete with everything, Ann?
Yes, Ann. Do you want to say any more? Lady Master, did you go away? Sounds like you're in Arizona and not on CBS Radio anymore. Okay, well, let's finish this up. Now, get this, Bernanke warned that it is not only the federal government that has financial problems. It is also state and local governments. Although state and local governments face significant fiscal challenges, my primary focus today will be the federal budget situation and its economic implications. Does Bernanke see the tsunami hitting or what? Then Bernanke put things in historical perspective. The budgetary position of the federal government has deteriorated substantially during the past 2 fiscal years, with the budget deficit averaging 9.5% of national income during that time. For comparison, the deficit averaged 2% of national income for the fiscal years 2005 to 2007, prior to the onset of the recession and financial crisis. The recent deterioration was largely the result of a sharp decline in tax revenue brought about by the recession and the subsequent slow recovery, as well as by increases in federal spending needed to alleviate the recession and stabilize the financial system. As a result of these deficits, the accumulated federal debt measured relative to national income has increased to a level not seen since the aftermath of World War II. Then Bernanke explains the deterioration and the problems it will create for the entire economy. For now, the budget deficit has stabilized, and so long as the economy and financial markets continue to recover, it should narrow relative to national income over the next few years. Economic conditions provide little scope for reducing deficits significantly further over the next year or two. Indeed, premature fiscal tightening could put the recovery at risk. Over the medium and long term, however, the story is quite different. As current policy settings are maintained, and under reasonable assumptions about economic growth, the federal budget will be on an unsustainable path in coming years, with the ratio of the federal debt held by the public to national income rising at an increasing pace. Moreover, as the national debt grows, so will the associated interest payments, which in turn will lead to further increases in projected deficits. expectations of large and increasing deficits in the future can inhibit current household and business spending. For example, by reducing confidence in the longer-term prospects for the economy, or by increasing uncertainty about future tax burden and government spending, and thus restraining the recovery. Concerns about the government's long-run fiscal position may also constrain the flexibility of fiscal policy to respond to current economic conditions. Then he tells us how powerful the negative trends are and how the aging population and Obamacare are going to make things worse. Our fiscal challenges are especially daunting because they are mostly the product of powerful underlying trends, not short-term nor temporary factors. Two of the most important driving forces are the aging of the U.S. population, the pace of which will intensify over the next couple of decades as the baby boom generation retires, and rapidly rising health care costs. As we create healing centers and we create education about how simple herbs can heal the body, mind, soul, and spirit, the cost of health care can be reversed to not needing that kind of thing called allopathic medicine at all. As you know, it has had its place in emergencies, you know, to save lives or doing certain surgeries at the time. Yet when you look at Star Trek, and that's not really a non-reality, the things that heal there, that tri-quarter, we've got that.
Diagnostic tools.
Yes, and they heal immediately, too. What I'm saying is that the tools of diagnosis that the ships have, they not only diagnose in a minute or two, they actually apply the necessary healing in the next minute or two, and it's done. It doesn't continue on. Now, humanity has become a creature of habit, you might say. And the habits that have been created have been falsifications of the truth from programming. And literally, the belief in all the things that keep continuing is a result of that programming. And to break that programming, since we're socially habituated to as a collective, is a big nut to crack. It has to do with being able to open one's heart all the way and to think with the heart and to end this mental gyration. And actually thinking with the heart means to think with love in all of its ways. Love in the form of self-acceptance. Love in the form of kindness, generosity, willingness to help others, as we read in chapter 13 of Corinthians 1. Unless anything you do or any wealth you have is because we are loving others, it's useless. It's the worse than anything else one could come up with, is to live an entire life without interest in helping others. It's an aberration of creation. And we pretty much come onto the edge of the brink of that with the system.
This empire.
It's all been self-possessed. It's been possessed of absence of love and appearing to replace it with materialistic. So we're just hearing Bernanke discuss these conditions, you might say. So moreover, as the national debt grows, so does the associated interest payments. which in turn will lead to further increases in projected deficits. Expectations of large and increasing deficits in the future could inhibit current households and business spending. For example, by reducing confidence in the longer-term prospects for the economy or by increasing uncertainty about future tax burdens and government spending, and thus restrain the recovery. Concerns about the government's long-run fiscal position may also constrain the flexibility of fiscal policy to respond to current economic conditions. So he goes on and he tells us how powerful the negative trends are, and now the aging population and the Obamacare are going to make things worse. Our fiscal challenges are especially daunting because they are mostly the product of powerful underlying trends, not short-term or temporary factors. Two of the most important driving forces, the aging population of the U.S., the pace of which will intensify over the next couple of decades as the baby boom generation retires, and rapidly rising health care costs. As the health care needs of the aging population increase, federal health care programs are on track to be by far the biggest single source of fiscal imbalance over the longer term. Indeed, the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, projects that the ratio of federal spending for health care programs, principally Medicare and Medicaid, on national income will double over the next 25 years and continue to rise significantly further after that. The aging of the United States population will also strain Social Security as the number of workers paying taxes into the system rise more slowly than the number of people receiving benefits. This year, there are about 5 individuals between the ages of 20 and 64 for each person age 65 and older, like 5 to 1. By 2030, as most of the baby boomers will have retired, this ratio is projected to decline to nearly around 3. And it 3 to 1 also. And it may subsequently fall yet further as life expectancy continues to increase. Overall, the projected fiscal pressures associated with Social Security are considerably smaller than the pressures associated with federal health care programs, yet they still present a significant challenge to the policymakers. And I'm just going to comment, this is what's so valuable about this pay-it-forward system that those of us who are involved now in the IBIM activity are in for that purpose, to literally completely reverse the fallout of the greed system by literally introducing helping others as the way the prosperity grows. Literally, that's exactly what's been done. And I just want to say that the amount of money that we got grandfathered in with, it took only this one person who took it out of their pocket and put it there so that he could see that this was the hope of the world to make this change that needed to be done collectively. It needed the group consciousness to be there. And it took all of these months to literally self-select ourselves as those who have that consciousness that's needed to do the reversal and to stay with it and to now be able to begin to do it. And it's moments away from beginning, and it could start tomorrow. And so I'm just going to put this prayer right now that I am a light being and that my mission is to help others, and that my purpose is at one with the highest good of all concern to happen here, so that where one is healed, all can be healed now, with prosperity, with love, and with the mighty I am activity of helping others at the source and at the center. And may it be so as this new spiritual global economy begins. Paying it forward. So again, as we say that momentarily, we have no rent for us to be coming home to the home where we live. And it is $900. And I would just ask again that people volunteer to see to it that that rent is covered.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, please. And thank you. Actually, there's an $80 extra because all our archives, we need to pay the storage fee for those archives, as there's too many of them to have in the little tiny hobbit house where we live with us. So it's $980 to be complete with that, and it was due on the 3rd. So it is. And KORAN 999, KORAN 999 at comcast.net. For those of you who have the snail mail way of assisting, the address for us is 2442 Cerrillos Road, CERRILLOS. Cerrillos, CERRILLOS Road. And that's number 385, Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87505. Thank you, and it's in care of Ram, capital R-A-M as in Mary, D as in David, Berkowitz, B-E-R-K-O-W-I-T-C. And, of course, you can stipulate on the BBS Radio PayPal button that you want that to go for us to be able to have a home when you get home, too. Thank you. And may all of these movements now of blessing and paid forward style commence without any further ado. I am you and you are me. And we are free as we work together as one being. So let it be. So then, Bernanke goes to warn that the financial mess also exists at the state and local level. The same underlying trends affecting federal finances will also put substantial pressures on the state and the local budget, as organizations such as yours have helped to highlight. In Rhode Island, as in other states, the retirement of state employees, together with continuing increases in healthcare costs, will cause public pension and retiree healthcare obligations to become increasingly difficult to meet. Estimates of unfunded pension liabilities for the state as a whole span a wide range. Yet some researchers put the figure as high as $2 trillion at the end of 2009. Estimates of state liabilities for retiree health benefits are even more uncertain because of the difficulty of projecting medical costs decades into the future. All that's going to shift when we have these galactic tools of healing, both educational in terms of awareness of our ability to self-heal ourselves instantaneously, this whole thing of the doctor syndrome. The doctor can be the miracle worker. Cynthia says, call on your spirit doctor or doctor for everything under the sun. I was just going to tell you, those who are not in physical embodiment at this time, they are begging us to ask them for help. I'm sorry, you got to say that louder. Oh, I am so sorry, Rama just reminded me. A dear brother of ours, Lance Tracy, passed away, and we just found out for sure that he passed away on the 31st of October when we were with Swami Purna. So I'm sure that he's helping us now on the other side, and he's with Rita's Robert and just so many of our family who have passed over. And remember, every single one of these ones can come back as they wish, fully healed in the recognizable bodies that they have. And that's possible as we carry on in the light of knowing that as we heal for everyone else to heal, as we give it an example and actually do it, as Cynthia says, you can discuss it and cuss it. It doesn't get the job done. Get her done. You know, we can describe how to pick up a glass. Or we can say, pick the glass up, and we pick it up. And it's a matter of arriving at full faith and full surrender to that faith in love and with gratitude. And the energy of the doing this is automatic at this point. Estimates of state liability for retiree health benefits are even more uncertain because of the difficulty of projecting medical costs decades into the future. However, one recent estimate suggests that the state governments have a collective liability of nearly $600 billion for retiree health benefits. These health benefits have usually been handled on a pay-as-you-go basis and therefore could impose a substantial fiscal burden in coming years as large numbers of state workers retire. Bernanke then breaks the news that the problem is global. It may be scant comfort, yet the United States is not alone in facing fiscal challenges. The global recession has dealt a blow to the fiscal positions of most other advanced economies. And as in the United States, their expenditures for public health care and pensions are expected to rise substantially in the coming decades as their populations age. Indeed, the population of the United States overall is younger than those of a number of European countries as well as Japan. Bernanke then re-emphasizes the damage this will do to the overall economy. Failing to address our unsustainable fiscal situation exposes our country to serious economic costs and risks. In the short run, as I have noted, concerns and uncertainty about exploding future deficits could make households, businesses, and investors more cautious about spending capital investments as well as hiring. In the longer term, a rising level of government debt relative to national income is likely to put upward pressure on interest rates and thus inhibit capital formation, productivity, and economic growth. The Sara answers every last one of these concerns. Larger government deficits increase our reliance on foreign lenders, all else being equal, implying that the share of U.S. national income devoted to paying interest on foreign investments will increase over time to foreign investors. Income paid to foreign investors is not available for domestic consumption nor investment, and and an increasingly large cost of service fees of growing national debt means that the adjustments as they come could be sharp and disruptive. For example, large tax increases that might be imposed to cover the rising interest on the debt would slow potential growth by reducing incentives to work, have high save, hire, and invest. He then states that we do not know how much time is left before all hell breaks loose. It would be difficult to identify a specific threshold at which federal debt begins to pose more substantial costs and risks to the nation's economy. Perhaps no bright line exists. The costs and the risks may grow more or less continuously as the federal debt rises. What we do now, however, is that the threat to our economy is real and growing, which should be sufficient reason for fiscal policymakers to put in place a credible plan for bringing deficits down to sustainable levels over the medium term. From there, Bernanke goes into a bit of wishful thinking about and by identifying ways Congress can remain in spending and make the tax system more beneficent and efficient. Good luck with all of it. The real important part of Bernanke's speech is the first half, where he warns that the financial crisis is just ahead. We are Nasara now in our being. Lady Master Nasara is overshadowing all of this. And Rama, did you talk to Lady Nada lately? Or?
Not in the last week or so.
Well, you did talk to Lady Master Nada about a week ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was exactly a week ago.
Yeah.
And?
She just said, like we've been saying, this empire is at an end now.
Okay.
And it is occurring on all levels with the fact that what is occurring is the nectar of the name called Om. That is the place where in which the word is given. It is that place, the sound of one hand clapping.
Are you hinting that you want to play a song?
I am hinting at the fact that Lady Master Nada's last words to me was, this empire is at an end. The nectar of the name, which is the name of the goddess, in service to the goddess now. This is what is occurring at the highest levels. And as we watch this empire crumble and fade, even right now we are witnessing that. And it is at the place where what I can say, what she said, is the truth shall set you free. And this is what is occurring right now.
Yeah, the truth is really coming. Okay, well, let's play a song, and I'd like to see the names of the different songs so we can pick one. Can you do that, Lisa? Okay, let's see. Dots. Hari Ram.
Hari Bol.
Are you having problems?
It's getting takes a moment to get there. Yeah.
Is that the one about
letting
go?
Yes.
All right, everybody, here we go.
And I had to learn to take the
I don't think you have to learn. Thank you.
Cheryl is waiting.
Hi, greetings, Rama, Tara. Can you hear me?
Greetings.
We sure can, loud and clear.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I thought I would join into the conversation for a moment.
Please do.
I just received the latest information from Patty Cota Rubbles.
Oh, great.
And I was wondering if you would like me to share that update.
Yes, please, right now.
Yeah. Okay, I thought it might be appropriate. It is entitled, We Are One, There Is No Separation, 10-10-10.
Okay.
And those of you that have been on my calls know that we use a lot of Patty Cordova's work in our invocation work. And so her website is eraofpeace.org, eraofpeace.org. And those that are on my list, and I sent this out already, but let's go ahead and share it. Humanity has been through some incredible shifts of energy, vibration, and consciousness this past summer. Now the I Am Presence, the God Self of each person, is able to communicate more effectively within the heart and conscious mind. These powerful shifts allowed our I Am Presence to burst the bonds of our manipulative human ego. Once that was God victoriously accomplished, our I Am Presence escorted this wayward aspect of our personality into the schools of learning in the inner planes where it will be transformed. Our human ego is no longer able to manipulate us or block our progress forward the way it has for eons of time. This is allowing people everywhere to awaken at an accelerated pace. When people awaken, they lift their hearts and minds, which in turn raises their consciousness and allows the light of God to increase on earth. When our consciousness is raised and the light of God increases in our lives, we begin to, quote, see with new eyes and hear with new ears. We do not need to fully comprehend just why this wondrous event occurred during this particular time, but know that it is the result of the dedicated work of millions of light workers and the entire company of heaven over decades of time. Now, day by day, the newfound freedom from our human ego is enabling us to more easily hear the still, small voice within. This phenomenon has the wonderful effect of allowing us to clearly perceive the oneness of life and the divine truth that all life is interconnected, interrelated, and interdependent. We now realize beyond a shadow of a doubt that when we are one with all life, and that there is no such thing as us and them. Our erroneous belief in separation is what has caused the pain and suffering people are experiencing all over the world. Our responsibility now is to heal the polarization that was created by the human ego. Never have circumstances been more perfectly aligned to accomplish this mighty feat. Just imagine the I Am presence within each person can now act unimpeded by the sabotaging antics of the human ego. All we have to do is ask our I Am presence to take dominion of our thoughts, words, feelings, and actions, and to guide us through our daily experiences with divine intelligence and reverence for all life. This will help us to stay focused in the light as we transmute the obsolete behavior patterns that were associated with our human egos. Our etheric bodies are known as the seat of all memory. Everything we have experienced through all of our earthly sojourns is recorded in this vehicle. That means that the memories of our human ego's devious schemes and deceptions are recorded in this vehicle. Since we are all creatures of habit, if we do not stay focused on our I Am presence, it will be easy for us to have a reflex response to our life experiences that imitates our ego's behavior. That will occur simply because that is the way we were used to acting in the past. It is our responsibility to be present in each moment of our lives. Daily and hourly, we must think and feel aligned with our I Am presence before we respond to a situation. Move away from any trace of fear and say to yourself, I am my I Am presence. From this level of divine consciousness, how will I respond to this situation? How will I add to the light of the world with my thoughts, words, feelings, actions, beliefs, and attitudes in this instance? Then, with listening grace, respond to the divine guidance of your I Am presence. Without the interference of our human egos, we will hear the guidance of our I Am presence in new and profound ways. This has been extremely difficult in the past, but that is over. Everything has changed. Listen and trust yourself. An easy test to be sure you are responding to the guidance of your I Am presence and not merely connecting with the etheric records of your human ego is to ask yourself, is this response free from fear? Is it the most positive way of handling the situation? Does this response involve the highest good for all concerned? Am I adding to the light of the world by responding in this way? If your answer is no to any of these questions, the guidance is not coming from your I Am presence. You are responding from a residual habit of your ego from the past. Instead of acting out of that old habit, center yourself and ask your I Am presence for guidance again. Do this as many times as you need to until you are able to answer yes to all of the questions. Many people are not aware on a conscious level that their I Am presence has succeeded in bursting the bonds of their human ego and that they are now free from their ego's fear-based manipulation. They may not even realize that they have an I Am presence. Consequently, they will not know about asking their I Am presence these important questions before responding to situations in their life. These people are going to be more prone to act out of the old habits and the obsolete behavior patterns of their human ego. But unfortunately, there is an answer to this problem, and the company of heaven is asking for our assistance in resolving this situation. Since we are all one with all of our sisters and brothers in the family of humanity, we can invoke their I Am presence on their behalf. Everyone still has the free will to ignore the inner guidance of their I Am presence, but without the interference of their human ego, they will hear this guidance much more easily. The important thing is to remember that our I Am presence is very practical. Therefore, the guidance always involves viable options and solutions that will enhance our lives and the lives of others. It is hard to keep resisting this kind of guidance. As we perpetually invoke the I Am presence of our sisters and brothers around the world and ask them to intervene in their lives, eventually even the most resistant person is going to respond to the heart call of their I Am presence. Then that person will see the life-enhancing results of their actions, which will motivate them to listen to that inner guidance on a regular basis. It is impossible for us to truly comprehend the magnitude of what this means for all of us to be free from the manipulation of our egos. But our lives have been transformed. Instead of feeling like we are struggling to accomplish our goals by walking through tar with gale force winds blowing in our face, we are now empowered in new ways by our I Am presence and the divine intervention of the heavenly realms. The patterns of perfection we focus on for our individual life and our collective lives as a family of humanity will manifest much more quickly through the newly created template of unity consciousness and humanity's newfound freedom from our human egos. We will co-create the new earth in a very tangible way sooner than we ever dreamed possible. Daily and hourly, things are going to get better on this planet. Pay attention and empower only that which reflects the higher order of being associated with your I Am presence. Then you will automatically empower the patterns of perfection for the new earth through your thoughts, words, actions, and feelings. Know that through your I Am presence, you are the divine qualities of liberty, divine justice, freedom, and victory, freeing humanity, and all of the energy bonds within humanity, which include the relationships and interactions of all people, all races, all religions, all organizations, and all nations. You are your I Am presence, liberating these interactions into the harmony of a higher order of being, thus expanding the influence of humanity's I Am presence on earth. You know this higher reality within your heart and mind, and through your I Am presence, you are a calm ocean of these divine qualities flooding the earth. We have God victoriously made a quantum leap up the fifth dimensional spiral of evolution. There is no turning back. Be at peace and enjoy the ride. Your time has come, and so it is. And so she talks about the rare opportunity from October 10th, 2010. We are all being presented with a rare opportunity to catapult humanity forward into the consciousness of oneness and reverence for all life. On October 10th, 2010, 10-10-10, there will be myriad activities of light around the world that will increase the light of God on earth. There is one that she said she would like to share, an event being orchestrated by an organization named The Power of One. And it's about imagining that new world of the people, by the people, with the people, starting now. Imagine what it would feel like to envision and create the world we most deeply want. Imagine what humanity would be capable of if we all came together as one, starting with a simple declaration of independence. Declaration of interdependence. 10-10-10, humanity's date with destiny, is a worldwide invitation to begin a new era of planetary healing, global community, and co-create a partnership with all life. In the powerful venue, I got goosebumps again, in the powerful venue of the National Mall in Washington, D.C., 10-10-10 invites humanity to begin the new era by coming together to make a profound, historic, and visible demonstration of the collective will to form the founding family of the new world. When we pause for a moment in silence, when we make the declaration of interdependence, when we declare ourselves the founding family of the new world, when we encourage everyone we know to do the same, We become a drop that makes countless ripples that create the new world. Take action. The more of us that declare ourselves to be the founding family, showing up on 10-10-10 at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., at events around the world, or even virtually, then the more visible our collective readiness to create the new world becomes. Isn't it time? And so then she gives some information about the power of one organization. So this was something I didn't completely read, and I wasn't really aware that they were doing an actual event. So isn't that fabulous? Tara Rama?
It is indeed.
I know that there's going to be many, many, many events on Sunday the 10th, including my own call. We're going to do some special work for the 10-10-10. And so it's just very, very exciting, to know that there's going to be another event in Washington.
I want to share this because, I mean, this isn't something we thought of or anything. It just showed up. Little Leela, our little 1 year, 10 months old, that's the 111. Her birthday is on January 1st, 2008. Look at all these ones.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, when she came in, and she came in on an 11-11 brown vibration in terms of her mission.
Right.
Look at these ones. And I just wanted to point that out. 10-10 got all those ones in there too in 2010. And it's the same vibration if you want to look at it as her birthday was in 2008.
Right.
So a child shall lead us, and I talk to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I thank you for allowing me to read that presentation from Patty. And I'm going to take this opportunity to invite everybody to my call on Monday.
Please do, and please give your name and your whole purpose, and again, and the times and dates for these calls. There's many new people on this call coming tonight.
Okay, Tara, thank you. I appreciate that. My name again is Cheryl Croce, and since February 1st, I have been leading what I call an ascension activation and meditation call. We're doing very high service work because we're not doing the call necessarily just for ourselves, but for every man, woman, and child on the planet. And so we meet every Monday for sure, and we've been doing some special Sundays. So one of the special Sundays is this upcoming Sunday on October 10th. It's 9 p.m. Eastern Time and 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And the phone number, if you want to write this down, is area code 213-289-0500. So that's area code 213-289-0500. The code is 7 digits. It's 946-7441#. That's 946-7441#. So we have been doing all kinds of magnificent work. A call on the 20th focused on physical health, perfection and rejuvenation and regeneration. On the 26th, our call focused on releasing resistance to change for humanity. On the 27th, we focused on preparing humanity for the arrival of our galactic brothers and sisters and all other changes with harmony, ease, peace, and grace. And last night's, or the Monday night call, focused on clearing and cleansing both the subconscious mind and the emotional body in preparation for the new energies of 10-10-10. So we have magnificent time each call is unique, and I certainly invite you to join with me. And people have the replay lines available too, if they contact me on my email. And that would be Cheryl Croce, C-H-E-R-Y-L Croce, C-R-O-C-I, at AOL.com. So yeah, I look forward to joining you, and I'll be joining you on Saturday for the call too, for the meditation. So thank you, Tara. Thank you, Rama. I pass the talking stick.
Okay, Cheryl, I just want to say something about what you're bringing up in me, and I'm being guided to say is that it's time for ceremony together. As ceremony is the highest form of spiritual ritual to evolve a change, and I mean evolve in the sense of ascension. And so this is why Mother said this is the most important call any of us could attend, because it's the participation and the conscious understanding that is made available. It has not been so easily available, and now they're saying this is not by one teaching. It's by the understanding of the oneness of our beingness collectively in ceremonial ritual magic of the highest order. And that it is, and make it so, says the commander. That's talk. Cheryl, are you still there? All right, sister, aloha. Are we still here? I just want to do another song after hearing that. The song of our heart and the wish for peace. We are all one. Okay. Well, this is something Rama found, and we were going to talk more about this. It's called the Elven World Restoration of the Tuatha De Danann tribe, people of the Black Irish from Egypt to Ireland to the land of freedom that we now live in. This is whole, that is whole. Take away whole, taking away whole from whole. Whole still remains whole.
Time to awaken. To your calm and shine. Time to awaken. To your calm and shine. Time to awaken. Thank you.
There's a whole series of music called Irish Celtic Mythology with Tuatha De Danann.
Yeah.
This is the story of Magdalene, everyone, and it's the story of Yeshu, and it's the story of the prophet. And it's the story of the one we are. We have been waiting for. Both the curse and the bliss. Lest we not understand. As we only have two things, the Francis Compton thinks Germain says, that we only have two things, our body and our understanding. That which we perceive, we believe, and therefore we inspire. Let it be of the highest good for all concerned with the greatest wisdom and understanding we could possibly hope in gratitude to God. Again, gratitude for this of all love that manifests with our unknown. When we are in the hill, I think we're going to take a step in that direction here. Phew, and let's play some more intermittent element music while we're at it. Thank you, Rama.
Yes.
You picked up on the energy right here where we are, and that's the energy of where we are. The mother in every place upon her is speaking to us through all the kingdom. And the music is coming forward. Thank you to the gift that we are as humanity, to all that is, and let it be. Embrace more of us as there is, as I love more. I do. Okay, we're going to finish a piece that we began last time. And it's about the Olmec, which has actually got this next last period now. We'll be texting, you'll see the Mayans coming in, and it's quite interesting. Remembering that we now know there is an absolute white race, galactic in nature, of Hyperborea, an island at the North Pole at the time, was hot tempered all year round, and it was the garden. And it was a place for galactic humans from all of these 200 million civilizations that we are descendants of that. And they intervened as our elders in a sense of their fifth-dimensional nature and the nature of their being appropriate for us to be able to experience and interact with. This isn't just about a battle. This is about the timing of now. And that now is the time for this. And then we get to be the biotransducers of, and the transmitters of this wonderful energy. Elven world restoration of the Tuatha De Dene. Fairies and elves. Okay, so to the helmet
of the
head.
These are the true ancestors of who we are.
It is indeed true. And the earth body of perfection with the divine designing of the sun children has no color. It has expression choicefully true color of that which is called white fire core of being in the light spectrum and the indigo violet sun ray race of humanity. Black and white together we are. We are all one, and it's going beyond that. It's going beyond to a universal empathetic, not sympathetic, empathetic. Divine empathy produces divine mercy, seasoned with divine compassion, bringing about divine justice. And so let our voices blend themselves and our bodies and our spirits to Sunday night and Monday night with our sister here. And so back to our Western civilization's development as bird tribe people and the helmeted head of the Olmec, leading into the completion here where we'll see the Mayan touch on this side too. which has an Aryan connection again. Very, 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 very interesting. Regarding Olmec sculpture. Yes, the Druids, the buried giants.
Agartha,
people.
Yeah. Now
these are giants.
Now they're starting to find these giant heads all over the planet. Like I have said, Tom the Cat is 12 feet tall.
Aboriginal Moabite Nation, anyone? We are ever moving with
I'm 9.5 feet tall.
Huh?
I'm 9.5 feet tall.
Yes, as we really merge with our light bodies, we're quite tall. All of us. Quite taller than now. The shrinking, in the sense, has to do with the contraction, which has been going through a natural cycle of contraction. Now, again, in yin-yang, the infinity sign number 8 on its side, the inward and the outward expression, the inflow and the outflow, with a never-ending story to it, has a contraction period to come to the center, and then it expands again, and comes back to the center, and then expands again. And it's the infinitude of ability to flow. And that's why they are Goyas wrote something called Surfing the Zuvaya. As these folks experiment with that surf called Sailor Wave technology, which is literally what the entire Zuvaya is made of.
We are scalar waves. They are scalar waves.
Yet it's when one is harmed, all are harmed. Therefore, if one is helped, all are helped. And that inward and outward soul can now take another understanding, since I think we have enough experience with polarity. We who ask to experience polarity and co-created it in a total universal sense. We created a whole universe that we give the name Nebadon. Oh my goodness sake. A Nebadon has a meaning. And I think about the word nebulous and Adonai. Nebadon. Yes, nebulous, yes. Divinely out of the chaoticness of all possibilities and with pure intention. This is it. This is it, as Michael Jackson said.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie yet. I heard it was good.
It's good.
All these beauty, light, color, sound, music, stage, the divine Riva of our inner child expressing through every imaginable destruction. And now, this might even be as scary, as we're being invited by our own superconscious higher self to literally take a chance to create a flow beyond suffering, an infinite, immortal, omniscient, omnipresent, all-knowing, omnipotent bliss. Lest we want to do another experiment, maybe we may choose something that will even take it higher. That's what he was talking about from the saying, going beyond the Bodhisattva. The Chiva in training is a master in bliss at every turn, no matter what it looks like. The power of love is one thing. The ability to understand and love to the ability of expressing, to be able to transmit that understanding to the left level and greater than oneself as we come together. That is bliss. There is no other. I love you. And back to our helmet that is one that we all have been. Regarding Olmec sculptures, Michael D. Lamonic relates that, quote, the most famous Olmec artifacts are 17 colossal stone heads, presumed to have been carved between 1200 BC and 900 BC, cut from blocks of volcanic basalt. The heads, which range in height from 5 feet to 11 feet and weigh as much as 20 tons, are generally thought to be portraits of rulers. Archaeologists still have not determined how the Olmec transported the basalt from quarries to various settlements as far as 80 miles away, and in San Lorenzo, hoisted it to the top of a plateau 150 feet high. It must have been as incredible an engineering effort as can be. Dora Lehman says, these people did not have beasts of burden, and they did not have wheels. We do not know, as they floated the block by levitation or on a raft or traveled over land, etc. Not only that, but some of these colossal heads were found in the Olmec city of La Venta, which was located on the island of Ponala off the Gulf Coast. Oil spill, anyone?
Mm-hmm.
As Arthur Graham Hancock traveled to the old colonial town of Santiago Tuxtla in Mexico, he found in the town park one of these huge heads. As he first spotted it, he wrote that in the center of the park, like some magic talisman, stood an enormous gray boulder, nearly 10 feet tall, carved in the shape of a helmeted African head. Here, then, was the first mystery of the Olmec, a monumental piece of sculpture more than 2,000 years old, which portrayed a subject with unmistakable Negroid features from fingerprints of the god. He goes on to say, on page 22 of his book, that, quote, it was unmistakably the head of an African man, wearing a close-fitting helmet with long chin straps. The lobes of the ears were pierced by plugs. The pronounced Negroid features were furrowed by deep brown lines on either side of the nose. And the entire face was concentrated forward above thick down curving lips.
Mm.
You see that?
Yeah.
I mean thick. Matthew Sterling uncovered one of these heads at Tres Zapotes, he examined, quote, cleared by the surrounding earth, it presented an awe-inspiring spectacle. Despite its great size, the workmanship is delicate and sure. The proportions perfect. Unique in character among Aboriginal American sculptures, it is remarkable for its realistic treatment. The features are bold. Insert. While contemplating one of the Olmec head Carlos Pellicer Camara had rescued from La Venta, Hancock mused that it would be impossible, I thought, for a sculptor to invent all the different combined characteristics of an authentic racial type. The portrayal of an authentic combination of racial characteristics therefore implied strongly a human model has been seen. Unquote. I'll quote again. I walked around the great head a couple of times. It was 22 feet in circumference. It weighed 19.8 tons. It stood almost 8 feet high, had been carved out of solid basalt, and displayed clearly an authentic combination of Rachel's characteristics. Other pieces I had seen at Santiago's Tuxtla and at Tres Zapotes. It unmistakably and unambiguously showed a Negro. My own view is that the Olmec's heads present us with physiologically accurate images of real individuals of Negroid stock. Charismatic and powerful African men whose presence in Central America 3,000 years ago has not yet been explained by scholars. Since Guérion and his son, the Lomini, were directly descended from Ham by way of the Hiarba or Arba, H-I-A-R-B-A or A-R-B-A, then they would have, in all likelihood, Negroid features and characteristics. So, this further links the Olmec to the Anakin of Canaan. Anakin, A-N-A-K-I-N. That's the next topic. Come in. Right here. Okay? More. Make more. Took some water in there. You can go ahead. I mentioned earlier that the root tal, T-A-L, from Talmai, T-A-L-M-A-I, the Anakim, is prevalent in place names across North Africa and throughout Spain. And like the Israelite tribe of Dan, it seems as though everywhere the tribe descended from, Talmai, went, they left behind evidence of their passing and displacement and physical features of the land. Have they left behind a record of their presence in Central America? Indeed they have. As you study a map of Mexico and countries to the south, you will find place names and geographical features with the root tal, T-A-L, meaning in abundance you will find them. For example, there are towns with geographical features with the root tal. Yes, and there are towns of Outlan, A-U-T-L-A-N. Maybe the T-A-L is transposed somewhat, yet these constant names, transpositions, yes, with those three letters. Canatlan, C-A-N-A-T-L-A-N. Colotlan, C-O-L-O-T-L-A-N. Kuautla, C-U-A-U-T-L-A. Teziutlan, T-E-Z-I-U-T-L-A-N. Huixla, H-U-I-X-T-L-A. And many others. There is the Mezquital River, the Mount Naucompatepeco. Mount Zetlan, Mount Popocatepetl, and the, pardon?
That's in Mexico.
You gotta come closer. You're
that recently went off, and there's been all kinds of ships going off.
Going up and all around.
That's right.
That's interesting. That's correct. I remember that. Mount Popocatepetl. And the ruins of Mitla.
Oh my gosh.
All of this.
There's a meat law in the West and there's a meat M-I-T-H-I-L.
All of this is tied in with these Atlans, the ancient Atlanteans.
Atlans were up in the northern African coast with Morocco, Algiers, and the next one, Tanir, I'm sorry. I am going to have to look at a map. Tripoli is there, too, up in the north. All the way.
Libya.
Libya, yes. And, many political strategies to cover up the whole story. Many things were primitive, even in those most advanced of times, in terms of attitudes of the Atlanteans needed a big dose of feminine balance because they believed nature was theirs to do it if it's what they will. The respect for all life was sorely needed, so here we come with this challenge of in balance, the master mom, the mother, second, future self of the oneness of our beingness. Now, the extent of the place names ranged from Mazatlan on the west coast, yes, indeed, to Guatemala. In Guatemala itself, we find. I'm going to need a drink of something now. Just make some water. Can I have some of that? We need to take a drink. Okay. And I'll have more where that came from, thank you. In Guatemala itself, we find the towns of Amatitlan, Escuintla, and Ritalhulli. Along with Lago Atitlan and the volcano of Atitlan, while El Salvador delivers Acajutla. The archaeological record also indicates the wide-ranging influence of the Olmec Anakim, A-N-A-K-I-M, people. Now here's the blend here. The long-nosed men. Yet this is not all. Strange as it may seem, sculptures of tall, thin features, long nose, apparently Caucasian men, with straight hair and full beards, and wearing long, flowing robes, were discovered at La Venta, alongside the Olmec head. Here's the story of one such sculpture. Matthew Sterling, the American archaeologist who evacuated La Venta in the 1940s, made a number of spectacular discoveries there. I don't know if you need to know why I didn't mean right now. It's just that I'm calling for some reason. And I'm just going to remind everybody else, too, please drink more water. Right now, the molecular structure is intelligizing through water. Remember, we're water bags, yet, you know, to clear the chemicals that have been interrupting the natural world for this beautiful design to be in. We're doing a lot of transmuting because we're doing something that is going to turn this garden more into its revelatory stage of Pita Lucoria, the diamond one, in rapid paces, and it does require that our molecular structure be fed these crystals, these water crystals. And 995, you can do three circles,
go in a clockwise manner, and around your water you can do it too. That's simple. You can even visualize it. And just in each circle, say a number, three of them, one at a time. Circle once and say nine. Again and say nine. Again and say five. So you make three circles and you go nine, nine, five. And that nine and that nine is completion, as above, so below. The five is the change or ascension state. Now, in medicine, just to point this out at this point, you can go two steps up or you can go two steps back. And of course, that's the polarity choice in the world. Yet at this time, there's nothing there should you choose to ascend. That back, because the eraser board, kind of cute little cartoon visualization of where you might be able to step back into the past, the erasure has arrived. And there's no thing there. And is that what you call free fall, Lord Rama?
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon. And here's to another glass of water, everyone. And you can do this and you can help all the transmuting ones to have water. So imagine you're drinking water for everyone now. Here we go. I'm ready for more, Commander. I drank a whole glass, everyone. Mary Jane did let us know that this has been a targeted area for heavy chemical concentration. It comes from the Canadian sector and all the way down this particular vein. We're just a little bit to the east of Nashville, Tennessee. And I understand why, because Nashville is a music mecca of the world. It's also been built with a bunch of expressways that converge. I think there's at least five that come from every direction. So let's just see the shuttlecraft show up so we can roll up all these streets that cause inevitable collision courses to be met. We've heard that too. So again, we're clearing all of that, which this area has been challenging all the people with. And I thank everyone for listening to this. So let's go on. The plan of the ancient Olmec site, Matthew Sterling, that's right, the American archaeologist who evacuated La Venta in the 1940s, made a number of spectacular discoveries there. The most spectacular of all was the Stella of the Bearded Man. The plan of the ancient Olmec site lay along an axis pointing 8 degrees west of north. At the southern end of this axis, 100 feet tall, loomed the fluted cone of the Great Pyramid. And Rami, you need to pour it too, because I'm indisposed for that. Okay, yeah. Next to it, at ground level, was what looked like a curve about a foot high, enclosing a spacious rectangular area 1/4 the size of an average city block. As the archaeologists began to uncover this curve, they found to their surprise that it consisted of the upper part of a wall of columns. Further, the excavation through the undisturbed layers of stratification that had accumulated revealed that the columns were 10 feet tall. There were more than 600 of them, and they had been set together so closely that they formed a near impregnable stocking. Hewn out of solid basalt, the transported to La Venta from quarries more than 60 miles distant, the columns weighed approximately 2 ton each. Lord Jamal talks about these things here in Tennessee, right in this neighborhood, too. That there are things like that right around here somewhere, too. Very interesting that we should be here now, doing this now. Yes, there were more than 600 of them, and they had been set together so closely that they formed a near impregnable stockade, hewn out of solid basalt and transported to La Venta from quarries more than 60 miles distant. The columns weighed approximately 2 tons each. Why all this trouble? What had the stockade been built to contain? Even before evacuation began, the tip of a massive chunk of rock had been visible jutting out of the ground in the center of the enclosed area about 4 feet higher than the illusory curve and leaning steeply forward. It was covered with carving. These extended down out of sight beneath the layers of soil that filled the ancient stockade to a height of about 9 feet. Sterling and his team worked for 2 days to free the great rock. When exposed, it proved to be an imposing stela, 14 feet high, 7 feet wide, and nearly 3 feet thick. The carving showed an encounter between two tall men, both dressed in elaborate robes and wearing elegant shoes, which turned with turned up toes. Rama, that those shoes you had as children shoes. They were turned up exactly like that.
Yeah.
These are the elven shoes, everyone. Yes,
yeah.
We found a Merlin outfit, and these Merlin shoes were like elven shoes. They were Merlin elf. Did he have any elven tendencies?
He had Jeff is on line A1.
Oh.
Hello, Jeff.
Yes, hello. How are you folks?
Oh, my God. Rama, turn it down a little bit.
Greetings.
We're good. You're strong and clear, Commander. Greetings. I would just say that power to the people. I really feel it. And I really feel the people beginning to feel their power and really finding ways to help each other. How do you feel about it, Jeff?
Well, I think that it's about time. I think that we're all waking up to the fact that we are, you know, we have powers that we never even imagined that we had. And I think it's about time that we, you know, have a better connection to the entire cosmos. The energy goes both ways. It goes up and it goes back to us, I think.
I hope
it does.
It does. Indeed does. It does as we can become fluid with the flow. I mean, that's the key, isn't it? The dance. I am the Lord of the dance, said he and she. Right now.
I was wondering if I could ask you a question.
Yes.
The question I had comes from one of your followers that has been talking with us before we, I mean, I have only heard you tonight. This is the first time. And he pointed out to us, a group of us, about 30 or so of us, that from your teachings and from his learning from other sources about the galactic humans that are here, that that we actually are in 2012 right now. This is not 2010 like it shows on the newspaper and newsstands and the calendar I buy, you know, at the store to keep track of the days. And so I went, after I heard that, to the internet and looked up the Gregorian calendar, the one that we're supposed to be on now, which was, I believe, created by Pope Gregory back in 1582, and then slowly other countries started to adopt the Gregorian calendar. And then I went back and looked up the Julian calendar, which was related to Julius Caesar, and that was supposed to have started, according to the summaries that I read, 45 years before Christ. So somewhere along the line, in all of these different timekeepers, we apparently have, and then of course there's the Mayan calendar and the prophecy of the end of that age and the beginning of a new era or epoch or hopefully a whole new life. I thought we had another year and a half to go before we could, or a year and 2 months. Well, I thought we had to wait until December 21st, 2012, which would have been the middle of those events. So could you explain to me how we are in 2012 right now? That's my question.
Oh, yes. Okay. Can I ask you one more thing before you say that? You get the answer. Say that, what you said about before Christ again and the calendar you were talking about there. Would you say that again?
Well, there's three major calendars. There's the Mayan calendar for 2012. Which ends on 2012, December 21st. There is the Gregorian calendar, which is named after Pope Gregory, which was changed in 1582. He changed the Julian calendar. The Julian calendar was supposed to have started, named after Julius Caesar, 45 years before Christ was born. In other words, minus 45 A.D., if that makes any sense.
That is all very cool, to that part that you explained there. That was really cool to hear that all in detail. Now, let me just, without saying
too much
yet, we all, in terms of those coming and listening to these things, are very curious and to know the true history. And really what we're learning is that it's got to be galactic in nature.
This is how we formed the Galactic Federation of Worlds.
That right. There is no one here other than a galactic being in
yes,
nature.
Right. And I would just say that as you could come to Grand Goddess Lily's calls in the Aboriginal Moabite Nation website, along with Zodiacus.com, some of these things you speak of would be answered because the Aboriginal Moabite Nation, the black folks already know this is 2013.
Well, not necessarily. That is only those who know, who happen to be no matter what color, although those who are pursuing from the history of black history.
Yes.
And they need to pursue it at a deeper level, at a galactic, at an archaeological way to really understand the origins of our galactic nature. Then you can come across, that's why we're doing this. That's why we're looking at actual documents that are marked, for instance, Ice Age. That is a documented possibility and probability of knowing the changes from before and after that point, because it changed the face of reality for the surface. Right?
When we changed our thoughts to one of the me generation instead of the we generation, as Tom Hartman calls it, it changed things on the planet. As we reflect what's in ourselves, it affects the planet, all of nature. The true laws are the laws of nature.
And so what's happening now is that it is an ebb and flow to contract, which would be going from the we to the me. A way of doing it within a balanced way rather than extreme, which is what one would learn as one would seek higher spiritual advice, knowledge, wisdom. to go beyond the concept of linearity.
We've all done the extreme sports, the extreme stories, and let's say mother's wayward children have taken the word extreme to the level where it's enough now.
Now, to get back to the question, though, there was an attempt by some of our brothers and sisters to push the extreme and to even lie maybe a little and maybe just a little bit more, especially around calendars, especially around, we don't want people to explore unknown realms and stumble across their galactic nature. Now, would they? Okay, so let's create some dogma and let's get a few catechisms going and let's do religion and then let's do a punishment, a crime and punishment system to go with it where we determine who's the criminal and we also determine everything since we are the deciders.
And we create a funky story about a Catwoman and a Batman.
And then we don't talk much about what happened during certain times when things really changed. Like the long-nosed men coming around from where and when have they come?
The tall, blonde, blue-eyed people with the beards.
As we understand that this has something to do with maybe the North Pole, yes, it does. Has to do with that concept of the North Pole and the elves and the fairies and the whistling while you work and that bearded Santa Claus. And then we got Saint Nicholas. And then we have the story of teaching our children to help to love one another. And so time is relative to our preparedness to expand into the unknown. And the attempt to constrict that natural flow has been maybe described as religion. So the religion, you said here, dealt with a change through the poop, you might say, that pope. Wasn't that Gregory the 13th or something? Was it the 13th?
I thought it was Gregory the 3rd, but I don't know. I didn't notice the number, but it was Pope Gregory something.
Yeah, there was a number.
Yeah, I think it's the 3rd.
Yeah, so we've got the Vatican changing the true timeline of before colonialization. By 520 years. You knew that, did you not? Or did you? When you learn about the Egyptian calendar and then you look at the Vatican Gregorian calendar, they cut out about 520 years to be precise, which changes our perception of who's who in the zoo and a very, very pinpointed personality description of an individual biblically called Moses is actually the same identical being as Akhenaten, and Lord Rama has an experience of that being a lifetime that he volunteered to experience.
Yes.
And to show up now to remember together. And so, we are actually, as we understand, precisely since the 18th of August in 2013. So we're going to continue to explore that as the way shows that we are, that we've been waiting for. So that's why I said, well, maybe we said too much already, yet no, this has been a blurred line as to who would buy for control for the next 1,000 years. Would we have another 1,000 years of war, or would we like to experiment with peace?
100,000 years of Sat Yuga.
Yeah. Four times the normal Yuga, this Yuga.
So what is today's date?
Well, if you want to start with the 18th of August, I haven't done it yet. If you wanted to start with the 18th of August being day one of a new Age of Enlightenment calendar, then you might want to do that and see what happens.
So the 18th of August, 12th,
as of the 18th of August of this year, 2010.
Which is not 2010, and it's always been 2012, and it ended, the 2012 ended on the 17th of August, which is a very interesting date, as it's harmonic convergence.
The end of harmonic convergence and the end of the Mayan calendar, if you will.
And so this is something for us to catch a vision of and to dream our dream awake now and to actually be able to glean that Barack Obama knows all about it, that he actually is that understanding. That he has spent his last 1,000 years of lifetime precisely being willing to volunteer, you might say, to be another Akhenaten of the now.
And this is why we got to heaven, have a chance to get through that keyhole as we pass through with the key master, and we're on the other side of this story, on the other side of that dark rift of the Milky Way galaxy, where in that parallel solar system universe, we're not even having this conversation. It's done. It's over. It is Sat Yuga.
So what we do is we become vessels for the reality to flow through. And we keep out of our own way in terms of schedules that are something that would only be gleaned from the past. And we stay open, an open book, and we do it together where we really learn the power of the highest form of love, which is praise. Let us praise, and let's accentuate that praise in the positive and eliminate the negative. It has been necessary to examine truth and to get to the bottom of this. Calendar changes and motivation behind such things. For what purpose? How do we always say it? Follow that darn money.
That darn cat.
Follow the money, because what we were doing is we were learning what we don't want to have as a value for money. And what we do require in terms of returning to the oneness of nature and nature's God that we are. And nature does not follow money for greed or misqualified energy. No, it has a natural flow whereby we now in that flow are revaluing money by how we use time. With greater perception, with greater wisdom. The Mayan calendar provides many of those expanded understandings. There's another astrological calendar that has been covered up, which has all 13 constellations you travel through. And I would be very curious for astrologers to start studying this a little more. As it's the truth about the fact that we're in 2013, let's look at that. Talk about Mayan numbers. What's that, 2013? And the Mayan calendar's 1320 cycle? Yes, time has many aspects of perception. And that's why letters and language have numbers. And that is why in the Mayan teaching, God is a number. Capis?
Greg Braden speaks about this. All of the super civilizations speak of God as a number. And that frequency is the frequency of infinity. and you get to 9 and you go to 1 and 0 and a series of numbers. This harmony of the spheres is the harmony as you look at a cauliflower or a broccoli and you look at the spirals. This is the Fibonacci series of what makes up that music that
music of the spheres?
Yeah, it's in that music, August Rush, where he could hear the sounds no one else could hear and play the music. That is what it is about. Terence McKenna used to talk about this on his journeys, how to ascend is through the heart.
We simply could never discuss wheels of time without understanding the levels that those wheels of time involve. As Ezekiel saw the wheel, we're talking about starships. And as we talk about Mother Earth now in her new life body, she is the diamond one to the Aquarius. She's a starship. She's traversing and she's creating a new orbit. And so we agreed to that. And that orbit is ever moving and changing and being influenced by new stars and other stars that are going supernova, which it is now a matter of navigating. Therefore, let's get out our star charts, everyone. And let's remember our navigation abilities through something that's called faith with a new sense of time. It's called galactic. Just the concept of becoming the 33rd planet to enter into the Federation of Worlds as an ascended planetary being.
This might explain it for ones that understand out there holding space around time is how you travel at warp 10 and beyond. And it is a matter of how you do that with the most utmost of delicacies and within the realm of that understanding. They speak about this in a newspaper online called IndiaDaily.com. And there are many scientists right now that are working on these concepts. They've already achieved in many ways warp drive, warp technologies. Our own secret governments are playing with this stuff, and it's been given to them. Yet at the same time, as David Wilcox and so many others have said, once you get to that moment, 2012, you have to go through the heart. You have to go through love. And it is, we are witnessing the separation of worlds right now as we are witnessing this in the everyday stories about how things are becoming more polarized, more defined, where they want to create this race war, and I don't want to use the word race, culture war, where they want to prop up this effigy of a man, Glenn Beck, who used to be a cowboy clown, mind you,
yes.
A rodeo clown.
Yes.
And he is playing with this idea of taking out Obama. And the stories go back and
wait
forth.
Wait a minute. I thought the idea was to take him out.
They're playing with it back and forth and upside down and all around. This is why the utmost of these times where we send the frequencies of the violet flame to this one family.
Wouldn't this be the important time for the galactic to intervene as it looks like? I mean, Eric, instead of the epitome
This is why, on a greater scale, people like Cornel West and so many others are coming forward and saying, support that man, do the work. He just showed up with Arianna Huffington.
Who was it?
Cornel West. Bill Maher, last Friday night.
Oh, we missed it.
Yeah. And they were saying it like it is. He and Bill Maher went through a litany of all the good things Obama has done. And
that's about time. He's done that before.
That's right.
This is the kind of insight that we talk about here. We perceive with greater wisdom, seasoned with divine mercy and compassion, so that justice is divine.
So that
we can live that divine template that we are, that we co-created for ourselves.
There was a guy on AMY on Democracy Now, and he wrote a book, or he I think it was a series of poems or plays or a book, and it was called Disturbing the Universe. And what this brings up is right now, Mother is disturbing her own universe with a dust mite on the end of her whisker. That dust mite represents all of who and what we are. And it is at that place where that little dust mite is disturbing the universe, the whisker, if you will, and it's reverberating across all universes of time and space, where that mighty sound is just that one hand clapping, and it changes everything right now. And it is at that level, humanity is awakening at such an exponential level, and these 13 families, given heaven and high water, they would rather you go to sleep and play in the matrix and make sure that you stay in the matrix and stay asleep. And Mother is that inaugural energy that will shake you up and bring you to the Tree of Souls so you can hear the sound of the drum beating. And that drum beating is Gaia Baiwamas' heart that is saying, I'm doing it. You with me for the ride? Let's go. I pass the talking stick.
Jeff, where are you now? Hello. Jeff? Okay, I think we... Jeff, no. And we're not done with the picture of what's the long-nosed man.
Right.
But, you know, I just was asked to look at something here. Now we're talking about... I'm just going to read a short little... Okay, the spaceships are coming by Dr. Joseph Jeffers, UFO spaceship or flying saucer. How? Now it can be told. This was way back in 1978. This little book that's been around a while. And he just says really quick, as I was born, there were no airplanes. My mother was amused as I told her that one day I would fly through the air like a bird. I was then 3 years of age. I have been flying since 1917, and I have flown over most of the leading cities of the world. In my youth, I was born as a flying evangelist. I even conducted some of my sermons from the air. On several occasions, I united people in matrimony. In these days, I believe that marriages are made in heaven. At least they were closer to heaven flying around in the clouds. I fulfilled my childhood prophecy that I would fly through the air as a bird. Who would have dreamed that TV would become a reality? One day I stepped out of bed and there it was, big as life. What we accept today as established fact would have been too far out 75 years ago. How well I remember the scare Orson Welles generated with his radio program of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. That was in the 30s. He caused an actual panic, and people were frantic with fear that we were being invaded by men from Mars. It seems absurd now that at that time people actually believed this could be a reality. Then just as things were beginning to quiet down, the Second World War broke out and another shock took our breath away. A genius by the name of Albert Einstein discovered the secret of the atom. Soon after, America exploded the ultimate weapon, the atom bomb, the A-bomb, MOAB, mother of all bombs.
No nukes, no dates, no flukes.
And the Moabite people, aboriginal, meaning from the stars, in nature, this explosion is an explosion that counteracts and rebalances for good our stellar nature. Heretofore, I never dreamed that one day an atomic bomb would be dropped on Japan and kill hundreds of thousands of people. And a war which didn't happen either. As I said, they had already surrendered. That was not necessary. Yet it is now past history. Puck Rogers had now come of age and mankind was nearly shocked. A new age had been born. From then on, it was uphill all the way. One fantastic discovery upon another. By 1947, we're in the prophet's generation, 46 to 65, 47. Americans had become so sophisticated and blasé that as the first flying saucer hit news in the headline, the reaction was, so what's next? As you had ever doubted, you know, these things we're reading now change time as you know it for good. I know there's one person back here. Hold on, Jeff. I'm going to read this. As you had ever doubted that we are now in a new age, that thought left you when you turned on your TV set and watched the most spectacular show on earth, men walking on the surface of the moon.
And it was a sound stage. We got kicked off the moon.
Well, they went the first time, but that was the only time. Did you ever think that one day from your living room, you would see the first Earthling walk on the moon? That really was far out. It was also mind-boggling. They never showed that for real, did they?
When Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, they first, I have to say, I believe that the first time we actually, what they showed in 1969 or whenever that occurred, I believe that was on the sound stage. And earlier in the 60s, even we've been being told by all the whistleblowers, we have already gone to the moon and Mars, and they had to pull something off to keep the absolute control over the mindless, useless slave eaters for food. And so they created the story about the fake landing on the moon. And to this day, the astronauts that really did go there, they're telling the truth now, and they are saying we were constantly buzzed by our galactic friends, and there were so many craft that were seen that it is hard to cover up the stories throughout NASA. Richard Hoagland you go to enterprisemission.com, you will see the thousands of stories Richard Hoagland has put out about how we've been for millions of years doing this dance, and now it's ending now.
Okay, I'm going to add a couple more paragraphs, Commander. So I know we'll get back to Jeff. Hang on there, Jeff. Or do you want to talk now? Go ahead, Jeff. What was up?
Oh, I just was trying to understand simply the part about how it is that December 21st, 2012, occurred on the Gregorian calendar on August 17th of 2010. Is this from a fifth dimension calendar that you're operating under? I'm trying to see if they correlate.
Well, let's put it this way. The change of the calendar by 520 years, we're actually in 2520 A.D. after colonialization, you might say, in the sense that when we bring all of that historical reference back. So there is 520 years of galactic knowledge swept under the rug, number one. Then there are other time discrepancies. And so this is a scientific process which I can't say mathematically how it all conceived of itself in terms of giving a date to correct from primarily the Gregorian calendar, which was then already a cover-up to the Mayan calendar.
The Gregorian calendar changed the Julian calendar by about 10 days. I don't understand why. Apparently the way they counted the days in the year was a big problem after the time they started the original Julian calendar. Are you saying that...
Yeah, that's true, too, because they added 5 days. It's only 360 days to make the round, and they added 5 days every year. That is also true. And that's how come we're... Instead of saying we're in 2012 on December 21st, which appears to be 2010, those kinds of considerations moved it up to August 18th. 2010, which is really 2013.
We're missing 500 years of our history.
Oh, not only that, they changed a lot of stuff. They did, and the change in the orbit accounts for a change in the timeline, too. These linear times are completely collapsed on themselves, and I am not the one that did the mathematics, but it is mathematically precise.
Is this like, are you using a base of the Egyptian calendars, or are you using a base of something else? Or, like, for example, there's a guy named Burris who talked about the fact that there are multiple timelines that these black ops people are playing with. Is that part of it?
They are playing with multiple timelines that converge into this timeline now, that gets erased.
They're attempting to make really awful inserts. They're not pretty at all.
This is what they have
and
done.
And they're not getting to.
Where they have, Mr. Burris speaks about this, where they have gone into the ancient past, yet they cannot get past 2012 because you have to open your heart.
Which means they're already past the point of returning because it's too far.
That's why I keep saying Mother's on that train, and she's getting anxious.
So, when is ascension possible?
Ascension is possible as consciousness manifests through the greatest understanding that one would need to do so, and it is a process indeed, and it's also instant. And there are many ascended ones amongst us, although we haven't become aware of them in the West easily, as there's been such a grip in the rest for people not to wake up enough for them to actually be able to express themselves fully and be understood here.
that experience that we've been having now for 2 years in a row with Swami Purnan is definitely that. This one has never died. This one is immortal. And this is a divine incarnation for the purpose of helping us to ascend as a collective now. That's never been done before. That's the deal that we're all choosing to be here now to do together, to ascend collectively. There's been individual ascensions, and that's been not easy to do either, to be able to even make a difference with the, you know, the impact of lemming consciousness and programming and all kinds of horrendous background noise of sexual abuse and beatings and you know, the whole story.
Well, can I ask you another question?
Okay, go ahead, Commander.
Well, just one last question. About President Obama. There was a recent article by Tex Mars where he claims that Obama is like a dual agent. You know, he's really working for the good guys, but he had to play the bad guy for a while, and that's why he's now getting rid of all of these negative entities from his administration so that he can, you know, actually begin the process of disclosure maybe this month or next month. And some even say that that Obama is a member of the Council of Nine.
Yes,
he is from
somewhere other than Earth. Then apparently.
Oh yes, he's from Andromeda.
As well as Sirius, and he represents the ninth member on the Council of Nine of Sirius of the Blue Lodge.
And his father Malcolm X did hold that before him.
Malcolm X was his father?
Yes.
Wow, he must be angry after the bad guys killed Malcolm X.
No, he's a very evolved, spiritually high being, and he is not of that lesser ilk.
This is a different kind of revolution. It's about respect.
It's a spiritual evolution revolution.
So he doesn't have anger and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, all of us have it. Everybody's got it. When you praise it and you respect it and you thank it and you love it, anger is on the same line of leadership. And that's what you do. And season it with your divinity of mercy and compassion. That's when it's doesn't eat you a lot.
So the fact that that Obama is from Sirius and he's on the Council of Nine in Sirius and or Andromeda, one of the two apparently.
No. Mother Sekhmet came to Andromeda and with other ships and her Peshat and took a whole contingency of Andromeda to Sirius. And they spent time in Sirius, so they left Andromeda and committed to the completion of the ascension of an extension of the Sirian sun system, which is our sun system, and now another sun within our sun system, Jupiter. And in esoteric astronomy, it matches perfectly with the esoteric astrology of the Ophiuchian constellation travel, where we are Sirius. We are one Sirius, and it's a trinary, and now it's a quadruple sun system. That means the universe is changing rapidly.
So are we kind of like connected to Sirius like quarks, you know, where they move in relationship to each other that way?
Yes.
Can you say more about that?
It is the nature of that quantum physics and the hyperdimensionality of this universe is where we are going as we learn about the hyperdimensional physics that Richard Hoagland speaks about. That brings us up to speed. with our galactic brothers and sisters, because the quantum nature of reality itself is just an illusion. There is no spoon. It's at that place. Of nothing, yet is everything. And I don't know how to put it in any other kind of terms of tangible language, because it doesn't hold, it fails.
There is a co-creation that's never occurred before going on, and we are really creating time ourselves.
They have
at a higher level.
We are being given a wisdom that our brothers and sisters have, that we lack up until this point. Either we have forgotten it or we haven't discovered it yet, but it has always been there.
Definitely.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thank you, Jeff, for all of those kinds of questions, because every question you have, it answers another. And there are many of those things that you ask that are quite pertinent at this time, as we are done with lemming consciousness and we're getting real by doing these kinds of interchanges. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your answers.
You're welcome. Sat Nam, until we meet again. Okay, right. Let's finish. Thank you. Namaste. And let's finish this little bit here. In early 1940, for many years, I have remained silent on the subject of spaceships from outer space. Not because I did not have the knowledge of the subject, yet because I was sworn to secrecy. In order for you to... Okay. In order for you to understand this statement, let me go back for a moment and explain. In early 1940, I was given a divine revelation. With that revelation came the dynamic truth that the Creator's true name is Yah-Vah. It was told that as I would give this long-lost name back to the world, I would be given the truth about the faith and the creation of this world. You see, it became vitally necessary at this time that we enter into a new vibration, because we are now into a new age, the space age or Aquarian age. We could not enter into a new age until we had the ultimate vibration. That ultimate vibration is Yah-Vah. This divine name was lost as it was removed from history long time ago. You can read about it in any of my books, specifically the Yah-Vah, Yesterday, Today, and Forever. The author here is Dr. Joseph A. Jeffers, J-E-S-S. E-R-S. Do you want to say something about him?
I don't think he's on the planet anymore.
No, he's not. His work's not. The Creator's true name, Yah-Vah, is the highest vibration in the universe. That's why it's written Y-H-W-H 33 times in the Old Testament with the intention of never saying it at that point in our evolution, to replace it with the Anointed One, Adonai.
Don't forget my name.
Don't forget my name. Okay, so are we going on here? Yes. All right, where was I? As used daily and exclusively, it connects you with the electromagnetic energy or force of the universe. It stimulates the brain cells and awakens the super being within you. You then become a sensitive,
and aware individual, and you are capable of receiving any information you wish out of the cosmos. All knowledge is stored. And they said all knowledge is stored.
It's in the galactic archives of the Akashic Records, which are accessible to everyone.
Through awakening your rainbow bridge, starting with the first chakra, going to the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and then learning the other chakras in the physical body up to 13, and then proceeding with the basic 7 to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16, the 9 stars above your crown, and then there's more. Jacob's ladder is a very tall ladder. And as Swami Purna said, there is a rainbow bridge. And we're on that rainbow bridge.
Jimi Hendrix talked about that in his last album, Rainbow Bridge, before he left. And he was in contact with Commander Monka and Commander Corton of Mars. And at that point, he was getting a little too knowledgeable for the 13 families, so they opt in, to put it bluntly.
It's okay.
Yes.
All choice is made before coming here as to how the work would be catalyzed. And of course, it gives people chance and love in spite of it, and it wakens whatever it does. And again, that's, you know, the feeling body is actually located above your crown in your higher Buddhist plane of consciousness, where it is called higher sense perception. That's called divine feeling. And that's where we seek those feelings out from the Buddhist plane of the mind, where mana emerges. As we seek those divine qualities of our being at that level, and we apply them to all levels below and above,
soma,
that's what we mean when we say creating time, and we only think with our heart. That means we think with all qualities of love, truth, peace, freedom, justice, and peace is the outcome of the law. And I'm just going to say it briefly to mind of Cynthia Rose and Foster. And as you wish to rebalance your male and your female, check out this teaching in the form of the music created at spiritussongtools.com. That's S-P-I-R-I-T-U-S, songtools, S-A-N-C-T-U-S, .com, Cynthia Rose Young Foster's website. And you want to know who you are? You want to know your galactic anatomy? You want to know your gifts of beauty? She's reflecting them for you with her painting there, in her music, in her angel messages, in all of her being. It's her blueprint. That's who we are collectively now as we co-create together. That is an impossibility for us not to be all that each one consensus, because we all have that interconnectedness. And we, of course, find our bliss by choosing to search and seek out. What? Seek first the kingdom of heaven, as above, so below, and everything is added unto you. So here we go again. As used daily and exclusively, it connects you, Yahba, with the electromagnetic energy or force of the universe. It stimulates the brain cells and awakens the super being within you. You then become a sensitive, and aware individual. And you are capable at this point of receiving and able to receive any information you want out of the cosmos. All knowledge is stored. This storage is known as the Akashic Record, as one of them. Everything which has ever transpired in the world has been recorded and is on tap in the cosmic realm. It is from these cosmic records that you are able to express any desired information once you plug into that current. It works in much the same way as your ACDC outlet works. The key to universal power and knowledge is, of course, Yah-Bah. It always was. It always will be.
Lenny Horowitz talks about this all the time.
The secret of the spaceships has remained dormant until the time was right for its exposure. The time is right and is now. Arise for me to reveal the fantastic revelation contained in this book. Mankind must now prepare physically, mentally, and spiritually for this new age. This book may shock you, as you will keep an open mind and heart and reserve your opinion until you have finished reading this book. Perhaps you too will see that we are indeed on the threshold of a fantastic new age. As Thomas Jefferson said, quote, "We are advancing rapidly to destiny beyond the reach of mortal eye." That eye of Yah-Bah. Okay, now let's just know we're going to read more from there. Yet we're going to go back and finish this long note then, Keith. Matthew Sterling, the American archaeologist who excavated La Venta in the 1940s, made a number of spectacular discoveries there. The most spectacular of all was the Stela of the Bearded Man. The plan of the ancient Olmec site lay along an axis pointing 8 degrees west of north. At the southern end of this axis, 100 feet tall, loomed the fluted cone of the Great Pyramid. Next to it at ground level was what looked like a curve about a foot high, enclosing a spacious rectangular area, one quarter the size of an average city block. As the archaeologists began to uncover this curve, they found to their surprise that it consisted of the upper part of a wall of columns. Further evacuation through the undisturbed layers of stratification that had accumulated revealed that the columns were 10 feet tall. There were more than 600 of them, and they had been set together so closely they formed a near impenetrable stockade. Hewn out of solid basalt and transported to La Venta from forest more than 50 miles distant, the columns weighed approximately 2 tons each. While the rubble, even before excavation began, the tip of a massive chunk of rock had been visibly jutting out of the ground in the center of the enclosed area, about 4 feet higher than the illusory curve. And leaning steeply forward, it was covered with carving. These extended down out of sight. Beneath the layers of soil that filled the ancient stockade to a height about 9 feet, Sterling and his team worked for 2 days to free the great rock as exposed. As exposed, it proved to be an imposing stela
14 feet high. 7 feet wide and nearly 3 feet thick. The carvings showed an encounter between two tall men, both dressed in elaborate robes and wearing elegant shoes with turned up toes. Either erosion or delicate mutilation, quite commonly practiced with Olmec monuments, had resulted in the complete defacement of one of the figures. The other was intact, which so obviously depicted a Caucasian male with a high-bridged nose and a long, flowing beard that the bemused archaeologist promptly christened it. Are you ready for this, everybody? Uncle Sam. Did you hear that, Rama?
Uncle Sam.
The white bearded man. High-bridge note that's taken from Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock. As Hancock personally studied the stela, two things seem very clear to him. The encounter scene it portrayed must, for some reason, have been of immense importance to the omen, hence the grandeur of the stela itself, and the construction of the remarkable stockade of columns built to contain it. And as was the case with the Negro head, it was obvious that the face of the bearded Caucasian man could only have been sculpted from a human model. The racial verisimilitude was too good for an artist to have invented it. Hancock was able to identify two other Caucasian figures among the surviving monuments from La Venta. Quote, one was carved in low relief on a heavy as well as roughly circular slab of stone about 3 feet in diameter. Dressed in what looked like tight-fitting leggings, his features were those of an Anglo-Saxon. He had a full-pointed beard and wore a curious floppy cap on his head. Around his slim waist was tied a flamboyant sash. The other Caucasian figure, this time, carved on the side of a narrow pillar, was similarly bearded and attired. Egyptian reliefs. Who were these obviously Caucasian figures carved in the stone uncovered at La Venta? They were uncovered in exactly the same strata as the huge Olmec head, so they were plainly contemporary with the head. Oh. Who could they be? Okay. As you compare the La Venta figures to the Egyptian relief of Abydos in Upper Egypt, which is actually, we might say, south, Upper Egypt, because the Nile that stores themselves in the upper part of Egypt, which is actually the southern part. Okay, and it's right on the border of Ethiopia, everybody. By the Platicans. As you compare the La Venta figures to the Egyptian relief at Abydos in Upper Egypt that depicts Battle of Kadesh, you will see similar attirement. The Hittite charioteer, a Canaanite tribe, shown in the relief, all have long, elaborate robes.
and shoes with turned up toes. Not only that, the hat or cap of the Hittite charioteers looked very similar to the cap on the figure on the circular stela at La Venta. While the La Venta stones may not be depicting the Hittites per se, other of the Canaanite tribes have worn similar clothes. We also must realize that there was quite a bit of diversity among the Canaanites. Some looked obviously Negroid, the Anakin, A-N-A-K-I-N, and others were very Caucasian in appearance. In Graham Hancock's note, quote, "It is by no means impossible that these great works preserve the images of people from a vanished civilization which embraced several ethnic groups." And fingertips of the gum. Philip J. Arnold III, in his article Ethnicity, Pottery, and the Gulf Olmec of Ancient Veracruz, Mexico, makes the observation that the Olmec culture was made up of two different ethnic groups. During 1991 and 1992, I served as co-director of a regional survey of the Cuxtla Mountains, which is Santley and Arnold, 1995. The survey focused on surface settlement remains and documented the entire pre-Hispanic occupational sequence within a 400 square kilometer portion of the volcanic uplands. As a result of his research, we now have considerable information on the early and middle formation period within the upland portion of the Gulf Olmec heartland. These data provide an important contrast to the riverine and estuarine occupation within other portions of the Gulf Coast during the early and middle formation period. He goes on to note, perhaps the most important finding from our recent settlement circle is the lack of congruence between the Tuxtla occupation and the documented, and that documented around Olmec centers such as San Lorenzo and Lorenzo. First, we encounter none of the large-scale architecture that characterizes the Gulf Olmec center. To be sure, several sites in our study area boast large numbers of high earthen mounds. Yet these sites invariably date to the later portion of the pre-Columbian sequence. In other words, the monumental construction that characterizes Gulf Olmec occupation is not replicated in the Tuxtla. A number of other discoveries by the author indicate that there was a difference between the Gulf Olmec settlements of La Venta, San Lorenzo, and Tres Zapotes, and those of the Tuxtla Mountains. Arnold concludes by saying, "It should be clear from the above presentation that early and middle formative period occupation with the Tuxtla was rather different from occupation along the surrounding coastal plain. Variation of material culture, especially pottery style, combined with differences in settlement configuration and subsistence orientation, all contribute to this characterization. The question, of course, is to what degree these differences may be attributed to ethnicity as opposed to some other explanation, given the current information. I believe there is reason to suggest that the tough laws occupants could constitute a distinct ethnic group within the Gulf Olmec culture. Although the Tuxlas were part of the Gulf Coast socioeconomic system, this range did not participate in much of the activity and symbolism that characterizes coastal occupation. Unfortunately, at the present time, we cannot establish whether the occupants of the Tuxlas saw themselves as different or were viewed as different by the people of the Gulf Olmec Center. In either case, however, it is clear that there was a lack of copying or appropriation of emblems and motifs between these two areas. Ultimately, we note a significant distinction between the activities of individuals in and around sites such as San Lorenzo, and the behavior of individuals within the Tuxla Mountains. Arlo's work clearly confirms what the stela and monuments of the Olmec Center have conveyed all along. The Olmec culture consisted of two different groups or tribes, the Negroid megalith builders and sculptors, and a Caucasian-like component of unknown function. The sudden disappearance, the suddenness of the Olmec appearance in Mesoamerica was noted by Hancock, who mused, quote, strangely, despite the best efforts of archaeologists, not a single solitary sign of anything that could be described as the developmental phase of Olmec society had been unearthed anywhere in Mexico, or for that matter, anywhere in the New World. What? No developmental phase? These people, whose characteristic form of artistic expression was the carving of huge Negroid heads, appeared to have come from nowhere. The archaeological evidence clearly suggests that rather than developing slowly and painfully, as is normal with static human society, the civilization of the Olmec, as that of ancient Egypt, emerged all at once and fully formed in the West. Indeed, this is Egypt, everyone. And it showed up in both places, but this is Egypt. Right here in the West, the entire Turtle Island. This is awesome stuff, everybody. Okay, so the archaeological evidence clearly suggests that rather than developing slowly and painfully, as is normal with static human society, the civilization of Olmec, as that of ancient Egypt, emerged all at once and fully formed. Indeed, the transition period from primitive to advanced society appears to have been so short that it makes no kind of historical sense to modern anthropologists, archaeologists, and as well historians. Technical skills that should have taken hundreds or even thousands of years to evolve, according to the experts, were brought into use nearly overnight, and with no apparent antecedent whatsoever. This is a mystery, unless you realize that the oldest culture arrived from across the ocean fully formed and fully functional. Say that again. This is a mystery unless you realize that the Olmec culture arrived from across the sea or the ocean, fully formed and fully functional.
It's been normal.
You know, did they just beam down?
Yes.
They were galactic. Right.
That's right. We've been doing this for millions, trillions of years.
And they are elders. Are they connected with the 144?
Yeah.
Elder brothers?
The ones who sit before the throne of the Father.
Oh. Okay. I thought there was a select 24 elders for that.
There are, and then...
And then there's a duplication process that moves out.
Yeah.
We saw earlier that later Indian tradition records the perishing of the Anakim, or the Olmec, giants in the New World, in a struggle with the Indians. Does the archaeological record support this? Graham Hancock notes that carbon dating suggested that the Olmec had established themselves here between 1500 and 1100 BC, probably earlier. Oh boy. And had continued to occupy the site of La Benza, which consists of an island lying in marshes to the east of the Tonala River. Sounds a little hairy.
This goes with red ice back in China.
You're going to play another song by Michael Conti?
Oh, do you want to do that now?
Is that what you're saying?
No, I was talking about red ice, tied in with the story of the giants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what were you saying about them?
That this right here, let me show you this.
Oh, Antimon, Mifsu, Malta's ancient megalithic temples, giants, and traces of the lost Atlantis. Well, let's see what time it is. No, we don't have time. I believe this being Friday night.
Today's Wednesday.
I mean, Wednesday night, we have 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So we've been discovering ourselves here, discussing all kinds of wild stuff. And it's 12:38, so it will be very shortly that we'll be saying a conclusive aloha. So let's pick a beautiful, nice, good, Celtic version song.
Yeah.
And let's complete this book. We are the ones we are waiting for. We're talking about this is us. This is the ancient Druid in the West. It is the children of Mu, ancient Lemurians, Lemuror, ancient Olmec, and I say Mayan for this tall, white, megalithic structure of these, both in Egypt and the West of the west of Africa, you know, that's still west, although they say Egypt, Middle East, hey, no?
Mm-hmm.
So Graham Hancock notes that the carbon dating suggested that the Olmec had established itself here in the west between 1500 and 1100 BC, and probably much earlier, and had continued to occupy the site La Venta, which consists of an island lying in the marshes to the east of the Tonala River until 400 BC. Then construction was suddenly abandoned. All existing buildings were ceremonially defaced or demolished. How would you? And several huge stone heads and other smaller pieces of sculpture or virtually fairies in peculiar grace. Just as had occurred with Ben Lorenzo. A vivid picture of the end of the Olmec civilization is found in the ancient city of Monte Alban. I've been there, everybody. It took my visit. The city stands on a vast, artificially flattened hilltop overlooking Oaxaca. That's true. And consists of a huge rectangular area called the Grand Plaza, which is enclosed by groups of pyramids, and other buildings laid out in precise geometrical relationships to one another. That's true. Hancock visited the site and recorded his discovery. I made my way first to the extreme southwest corner of the Monte Alban site. There, stacked loosely against the side of a low pyramid, were the objects I had come all this way to see. Several dozen engraved stelae depicting Negroes and Caucasians, equal in life, equal in transition, death and rebirth and ascension. At Monte Alban, however, there seemed to be carved in stone a record of the downfall of these masterful men. It did not look as though this could have been the work of the same people who made the La Venta sculpture. The standard of craftsmanship was far too low for that. Yet, what was certain, whoever they were, and however inferior their work, was that these artists had attempted to portray the same Negroid subjects and the same goatee bearded Caucasian as I had seen at the fence. Wow. There the sculptures had reflected strength, power, and vitality. Here at Monte Alban, the remarkable strangers were corpses. All were naked. Most were castrated. Mm-hmm. Some were curled up in fetal positions as so to avoid showers of blows. Others lay sprawled, blasting from fingerprints of the gods. Page 146. Once again, archaeological evidence supports the traditions of the native people. What?
New China watches a ship. Every day this is going on.
Oh, look at that ship.
Yeah.
Watch the new China UFO sighting closes the airport.
This is on Huffington Post.
Right now.
Right now.
Oh, my goodness. Come on, you guys, get in here. We need you now. Get in here.
Mother
is up.
Mother is showing up now.
So once again, archaeological evidence supports the traditions of the native people. The megalithic Olmec civilization that left such a mark in the archaeological record of Mesoamerica was that which developed from the Anakin Fomorian. F-O-M-O-R-I-A-N. Survivors, of the defeat they received at the hands of the Egyptians in Spain.
The Fomorians are another group connected with the Tuatha. Tuatha de Dan.
You don't want to put coconut milk in there and potatoes?
I did.
Okay. More than 1,200 years before the death of the Messiah, again, that was, they received a defeat at the hands of the Egyptians in Spain. More than 1,200 years before the death of the Messiah. the customs of these people, megalith, child sacrifice, place naming, all point to their origins in North Africa and Canaan. The mystery of the Olmec is solved by studying the traditions and archaeological records of a people, as well as accepting the records of bygone historians, and we can arrive at the truth and lift the veil that continues to cloud the view of the experts of this world. That's the end. It's called Hope of Israel Ministries Taking the Lead in the Search of Truth. Okay, you can go to www.hope-of-israel.org. All right, so we are now going to say aloha and mahalo for listening tonight. And to be continued, as Cynthia says, to be continued. And we love you with all our hearts and soul and mind and strength and being. We love up into that power of root. No return. And Lord Rama, what's your choice?
This is called Diva Prima Yamana Asu.
Namaste, everyone.
Namaste.
See you tomorrow.
Satnam.
Nimaya Asu. Asu Nimaya. Yemaya lolo lolo, lolo yemaya, yemaya asesu, asesu yemaya, yemaya lolo lolo. Yemaya Asesu, Asesu Yemaya, Yemaya Olodu, Olodu Yemaya, Yemaya Asesu, Asesu Yemaya. Yemaya Olodu, Olodu Yemaya, Yemaya Asesu, Asesu Yemaya, Yemaya Olodu, Olodu Yemaya. Yemaya Asesu, Asesu Yemaya, Yemaya Olodu, Olodu Yemaya. Ah.